Hello, and welcome to the Space Weather Facts and Forecast podcast. I'm Isaac Bregoman, amateur space weather enthusiast, and I'll be giving you the current space weather conditions, the forecast for the upcoming week, and telling you all about a fascinating space weather phenomenon. Stay tuned. After taking a good break, the sun seems back to business. We have 14 numbered active regions on the Earth-facing disk at the moment. In the past week or so, there have been a number of moderate M flares and many small CME liftoffs, which I'll talk about in a minute, some from filament eruptions. There's currently a 75% chance of an M flare occurring, and a 20% chance of an X flare. This is largely due to the presence of an unstable magnetic delta in sunspot region 3647, which has a few days left before it rotates out of an Earth-facing position. Overall, there is quite a good chance of an Earth-facing flare in the next few days. The solar radio flux is high as well, at 213 SFU, indicating high activity. While the current geomagnetic conditions are quiet, with only a KP2, we had a strong storm, a KP7, yesterday. This was from a CME impact and brought some favorable periods of south BZEG and strong aurora for those in Europe and Asia. Unfortunately for aurora chasers here, the storm subsided before darkness reached North America. However, there appear to be several small CMEs on their way to Earth now. They were launched from April 16th to 18th, and while none are fast or strong, they could have a strong enough combined effect to create a KP5 or even 6. They should arrive tonight or tomorrow, along with a coronal hole high-speed stream also on its way. We could be in for a few days of active conditions. Plus, there's always the chance for one of the Earth-facing sunspot groups to launch a storm. If you're an aurora chaser at high or middle latitudes, I'd be on the ready in the next few days, and keep watching the data. I would not be surprised to see periods of KP5 with a slight chance for 6 over the next day or two.
Thanks for listening to the forecast. Now it's time to talk about this week's featured space weather phenomena.
In this episode, I thought I'd give a brief overview of how to go aurora chasing, in the northern hemisphere at least, and what data values to look for before you go outside. The first thing before you go out at night is, of course, to make sure you have a spot to set up. Ideally, it should be dark, a bit out of the city, although it shouldn't be too hard to get to. Pick somewhere you can safely pull over and park or get out. If you're on the side of a road, there obviously shouldn't be too much traffic. Make sure you feel safe at your spot in the dark. A park just out of the city could work great. Taking a friend along is always a good idea as well. In terms of gear, you really don't need to take much other than your eyes to see the aurora. A camera, even a phone camera, can be helpful to pick up fainter auroras and pull colors out. Take a tripod if you want to take long exposure shots, and of course, dress for the weather and take a hot drink along. The hardest part is deciding when it's worth it to head out. There are many factors that have to align to see the aurora, and the first of those is the KP, which is a measure of planetary geomagnetic activity. The KP ranges from 0 to 9 and indicates the current overall magnetic and auroral activity. There's many places you can check the KP index, but spaceweatherlive.com is my favorite. Here's what you're looking for. If the KP is from 0 to 2, the aurora will generally be quite faint and far north, generally above 70 degrees north in Europe and Asia, or about 55 north in North America. The auroral oval dips lower in central Canada because of the location of the North Geomagnetic Pole, making it possible to see the same auroral shows from farther south than in other parts of the world. I talked all about this oval dip and the geomagnetic poles in episode 19 from January. You can go back and listen to that one after if you missed it. For KP values from 3 to 5, auroral activity picks up with more movement and bright displays. At this level, you would usually need to be at about 60 to 65 degrees north in Europe and Asia, or 50 north in North America to see the lights. Note that these latitudes are roughly the minimum. Viewing from farther north would likely still give you a great show. When the KP reaches 6 or 7, a moderate storm is in progress. Aurora will generally be quite bright and active, visible as far south as 55 to 60 degrees in Europe and Asia, or 45 degrees in North America, far enough south to be seen from the northern states. Finally, when the KP reaches 8 to 9, a severe storm is underway, with very bright and active aurora. Those at latitudes of 50 to 55 degrees north in Europe and Asia may spot the lights, while in North America they can be seen as far south as 38 to 40 degrees or so, deep into the US. Now these latitudes are only rough guides, but if the KP level is high enough to possibly see aurora at your latitude, it's worth looking into the data a bit harder. Once again, Space Weather Live is an awesome site that shows you all the data you need in a user-friendly view. I'll do my best here to explain what you're looking for. First, on Space Weather Live, you'll see the real-time solar wind data. This includes speed, density, magnetic field strength, and BZ, and it's measured by a satellite located just upstream of Earth, towards the Sun. For speed, values above 400 kilometers a second are considered elevated, and anything above 500 kilometers a second is high. The higher the solar wind speed, the better the aurora will be, although it's not critical to have a high wind speed to see them at all. The solar wind density, measured in particles per centimeter cubed, is elevated if it's above about 20. Again, it's not absolutely critical that the density be high to see the northern lights, but you'll get a better, brighter show if it is elevated. The next important value is the IMF, Interplanetary Magnetic Field Strength. This is considered strong above about 10 NT, and as always, the stronger the better. If it's below 10, the aurora may still be visible, if the other solar wind parameters are strong. That's the thing, if a high KP value is being reported, and only one or two solar wind values are subpar, while the rest are okay, it's still worth going out to check. But if all the values are low, then that signals that the high KP may be about to end, since things have calmed down. Finally, and maybe most importantly, we have the BZ. This measures the strength in only one direction of the IMF, the direction parallel to Earth's magnetic field. The BZ can be either positive or negative, sometimes reported as north or south. A south BZ means the solar wind can effectively penetrate Earth's magnetic field and create a great light show, while a north BZ means that the solar wind is repelled away and can't penetrate the magnetic field as well, leading to weaker aurora. The mechanics of this get complicated, but if you want more of an explanation, you can go back and listen to episode 5, where I talk about all the different solar wind values and what they mean. The BZ is so important that strong south values, below about minus 10, can make the KP climb up to storm levels when the other data isn't particularly strong, while a strong north BZ, above about plus 10 or so, can completely kill an ongoing storm. So if all the other data looks strong, and you're deciding to head out to see the aurora, make sure the BZ is favorable. At high latitudes, such as 55 or 60 degrees north, you might still see the lights with a north BZ, but at a lower latitude, you really need a south BZ to have much of a chance. So to sum it up, if you live near the Arctic Circle, you probably see the aurora most nights. If you live farther south, though, you'll want to watch out for a KP of at least 5, depending on your latitude, and elevated solar wind data, and especially a south BZ. If all this lines up and you have a good dark spot to set up, you might get to see the northern lights. Of course, nothing's a guarantee, since forecasting the exact behavior of the aurora is near impossible. And this is all neglecting the single biggest factor determining whether you'll see the lights: your weather. Of course, it has to be clear out, or at least not totally overcast. It can be quite a bit of work chasing the aurora, but once you see it, it'll all feel worth it. Thank you for listening to my podcast. If you enjoyed the show, make sure to subscribe and share it. Also, please consider leaving a review. It helps the podcast get found. New episodes are released on the third Saturday of the month on major podcast platforms. See you next time.